Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PFS Global Support Podcast. Our mission is to provide support, guidance, and coping strategies for thousands upon thousands of men the world over afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. While medical researchers are learning more about this devastating condition in an effort to cure it, we're here to listen to your experiences, share them across borders, and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle this growing epidemic and put an end to it for future generations.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. My name is Amir Karkouti, and I am your host of the PFS podcast. I haven't done this in a while, so I'm really excited to jump back on and get on here. We've had a few good shows with some doctors on, so I want to kind of keep this going with the doctors. So today we have a very special guest that will be joining us. His name is Dr. Greg Emerson, and I actually don't know much about him. I got an email from one of the people that emailed me on, you know, once they've heard my stuff, and they said, hey, you need to get Dr. Greg Emerson on here. I think he'll be really good for you. And he is, I believe, in Brisbane. So it's around 1 o'clock where he's at, 7 o'clock here, p.m. in San Diego where I'm at. And I am really excited to talk to him because, number one, he's not from the United States. So I'm really curious to hear the kind of perspectives that people have in other parts of the world regarding PFS. Secondly, he is a medical doctor, but he's also really passionate about helping people because he had his own personal battle with illnesses. So, you know, when you have a smart guy like Dr. Emerson having issues himself with a medical background, I am really, really curious to see what kind of results he's gotten and what actually happened to him. So before we get him on the show, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. Let me see. Let me read you a little bit. This is from his website, and you can go to his website at drgregemerson.com. And if you go to the show details, you'll find it there as well. Although I'm having a little bit of trouble right now. I don't know what happened, but it completely deleted everything. So I'll put it back in once we're done. But in the meantime, let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a loving partner, proud father, physician, a permaculture farmer, sustainable living advocate, and wilderness survival enthusiast. He is interviewed regularly on America's most popular health television programs because of his dedication to finding the underlying root causes of illnesses. So again, I'm really, really excited to see what he believes causes post-finasteride syndrome. I mean, obviously, it's finasteride, but what we can do about the root cause of trying to fix it. And he regularly writes for America's most widely distributed health newsletter. And when he's not working in his clinic, he is tending to his garden, caring for his animals, roaming the wilderness, or practicing his survival skills. He's a founder and medical director of the Emerson Health and Wellness Center. Oh, I just lost my, where is he? Okay, there it is. Which opened in October of 2005, and from May 2008 to October 2011, he was a co-director of nutritional and environmental medicine in Queensland. And then again, he decided to take the road less traveled and founded Dr. Greg Emerson's Treat the Cause Clinic. I love that name, by the way, and that's based in Brisbane. He's also a consultant in nutritional and environmental medicine, a senior specialist in emergency medicine, and in diving and hyperbaric medicine. And for over 18 years, he's practiced in several large public hospitals, including 2 years as an associate professor of emergency medicine at the University of Alberta Hospital in Edmonton, Canada. I can go on. He's had a ton of experience. He's been around the block. He actually, if you go on his website, he looks pretty young. So I don't know if he's like Benjamin Button and he's just getting younger as he's getting older, but he looks wonderful, and I'm assuming that that's because he's probably practicing what he's preaching. And just to give you a little bit of his qualifications, they're a little bit different, it looks like, in the United States, but he's got a Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery, Diploma of Obstetrics. It's a hard one for me. Diploma of Diving and Hyperbaric Medicine. And he's a fellow of the Australasian College of Emergency Medicine and fellow of the Australian College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting him on the phone. And interestingly enough, as we speak, we have him on the line right now. I was just getting done talking about you. Are you on the line, Dr. Emerson? Let's see. And let me get you on. There you go. Are you on the line, Dr.
I can hear you.
Welcome. Man, I was getting worried. I didn't know where you were at, but thank goodness you've done so much in your profession that I had a lot of time to kind of bring you up and talk about what you've done. So before we begin,
I was getting worried too. I'm much better at making a fire these days with some sticks than connecting to complicated computer communication systems. I'm proud of myself.
Well, you know what? I'm really happy you made it too. And I was just reading that you are very into wilderness survival enthusiast. I'm glad you got this technical stuff figured out. And before I begin, Dr. Emerson, I want to ask you, I was reading and it says you had a long personal battle with illness, which led you to a profound exploration of healing processes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it was a combination of things, which it always usually is with a chronic illness. It wasn't one problem, but it was a combination of mold illness, which, as you now know, I mean, 20 years later, nobody knew much about mold. But I got sick from mold. And, of course, with Dave Asprey's stuff and Daniel Vitalis is talking about it now, everybody's kind of talking about mold, but nobody knew much about it 20 years ago. It was mold, it was parasites, and it was adrenal fatigue from working too long and too hard in emergency departments. But those combination of things led to all sorts of strange neurological and fatigue problems that no one had an explanation for. That took me a while to sort out, but as usual, the benefit from sorting that out was I decided there was a lot of people like me who had unexplained illnesses, and I would use what I now had learned to help other people get better.
Yeah,
so thank goodness for mold. It changed my life.
Yeah, right. I mean, one of your maxims I really like is, it's on your website about your philosophy. You say, to maximize the chance of recovery, it requires a refusal to accept that there is no answer, which means you probably did a lot of searching to see what's going on with you, I'm guessing.
It's on your.
I'm just going right from your website. I love that. I actually agree with it. Yeah, that's good. And you know, for people that are listening that say there is no hope with PFS, I mean that hits it on the nail. That I will absolutely refuse to accept that there is no answer to what I'm going through. And it's honestly, number one, it's given me hope. Number two, it just gives me an opportunity not to give up and find, you know, what I need to do to get myself back to feeling better. Now, you said something about adrenal fatigue. I know that's kind of a pop word a lot right now, at least in the United States. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because a lot of people in the forums with PFS are comparing it to adrenal fatigue, because a lot of the symptoms I had when I looked at adrenal fatigue looked identical. So can you tell us if there's any similarities or if that has anything to do with it?
No, it's two completely different conditions. I mean, there's always an overlap. There's always a 6 degrees of separation connection with anything, but there's no direct connection between the adrenal gland and post-finasteride syndrome, because the adrenal works in very closely with the thyroid, and the thyroid is a spark plug for every cell in the body. So you get this 6 degrees of separation, but no direct connection. And there is a lot of confusion about adrenal fatigue. I see people come and see me and say, oh, my salivary cortisol levels are high, I've got adrenal fatigue. And I say, no, that's the opposite. Adrenal fatigue means that you have redlined your car, your Dodge, for far too long, and you have burnt yourself out, which means your adrenal gland can no longer produce sufficient cortisol for your needs, therefore you are tired all the time. Now, a lot of us enjoy having high cortisol levels. It's the high adrenaline lifestyle. I mean, I never used to take a holiday. If I did take a holiday, I'd go and dive 50 meters underwater, or I'd go climb a mountain, which is a great feeling, that high cortisol level for a while. But of course, eventually, your adrenal glands can only handle so much redlining for so long. And eventually, your adrenal glands, instead of being a big, juicy plum sitting on top of your kidneys, become a shriveled prune and eventually a raisin, basically. And every time you try and squeeze some more cortisol out of them, it's like squeezing a raisin. There's not enough juice that comes out. So people with adrenal fatigue will have low cortisol levels in their blood. They will have low cortisol levels in this library test, because it doesn't matter what you do, you cannot squeeze any more juice out of that raisin. If you've got high cortisol levels, it means you're stressed. It means you live in or you're enjoying that high adrenaline lifestyle. And eventually, if you're not careful, you will burn yourself out. But at the moment, the condition is stress, not adrenal fatigue. Adrenal fatigue is characterized. You wake up in the morning, you find it very difficult to get out of bed. You get out of bed, you're a bit dizzy. You get to lunchtime, you have a kind of, you know. I remember when I used to work in the emergency department, I'd arrive at work and there'd be like 100 people waiting. And I'd just wade in there and say, look out, you know, I'm here, I'll fix everybody up. When I had adrenal fatigue, I'd be sitting in my office with my head in my hands going, I can't go out there anymore. It's that feeling. It's like I just cannot cope with the stresses that I used to smash really easily.
That's really, I mean, this is really, really good. I know that you're telling me adrenal fatigue is not, is a different condition. This is really actually really important news, because there's a lot of people that are, then is it misinformation, or is it the wrong place to go if you have PFS to try to get resolved with trying to figure out your adrenals? Is that the wrong way to go?
Well, of course, if you've got PFS, you're going to be, everybody I know with PFS is very stressed. You know, you've got a 26-year-old man who's normally, you know, got high levels of testosterone. All of a sudden, he's got low levels of testosterone. Nobody can seem to fix him. He's, you know, it's been a year since he's had any sort of libido. He's a phenomenally stressed young man, and he's going to wear out his adrenal glands, but almost certainly be a consequence of the post-finasteride syndrome, not a cause.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Just like someone that has anxiety or depression. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of 20-year-olds that can't get an erection anymore and are depressed. And it may just be that a 20-year-old that can't get an erection is going to get depressed. They might not have a direct correlation. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes. Exactly. They will get depressed. They will get anxious, and therefore they're putting extraordinary stress on their adrenal glands. And eventually their adrenal glands will fail, and then they will get adrenal fatigue. But you can't, if you say, I'm tired all the time, I can't get out of bed, and you do a salivary cortisol level or a blood cortisol level, and it's high, it's not adrenal fatigue, it's stress. There is some high cortisol levels will not cause fatigue. Cortisol is one of your energy hormones.
So let me ask you, Dr. Emerson, if that's the case, where should someone who has post-finasteride syndrome, where should they start looking? What's the first way, if someone comes to your office, what are you looking at first and foremost?
That's a really good question, and it's a hard question to answer. And I was talking, and here's one of the problems we have to understand is the problems with medicine now. This is probably the first place to start, to understand what we're dealing with. And you'll know this, and you'll recognize it when I tell you, but the problem with medicine, for a number of reasons, is it's become phenomenally subspecialized. The neurologist has the five conditions he looks after. He looks after multiple sclerosis, he looks after motor neuron disease, he looks after Parkinson's disease, strokes, and migraines. If you don't have one of those five things, the neurologist is not interested. The gastroenterologist looks after ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, stomach ulcers, stomach cancer. If you don't have those problems, it's not his problem anymore. So, and that circle of specialty, that circle of influence is shrinking all the time for a number of reasons, which means that the gaps between the circles, if you like, if you put a series of small circles on a piece of paper as to each specialist area of expertise, those circles are shrinking, which means the gaps between the circles are becoming much bigger. And a lot of people with chronic illnesses are now falling between those gaps. And they're referred back to their family practitioner, but the poor family practitioner's got 7 minutes in Australia, at least, to sort a problem out. And if it's a neurological problem that the neurologist can't sort out, how is he or she going to sort it out in 7 minutes? So that's an enormous problem. The other enormous problem is that because of that sphere of expertise, that circle of expertise is shrinking, the neurologist may not understand the link anymore between the gut and the brain, or they say, and the rheumatologist is not going to understand that if you've got a parasite in your gut, it might be affecting your joints. And I was speaking to I don't know what you call it in the US, but we call them flight attendants here, people help you out on the plane. And we were talking about this yesterday, and I said to her, look, it's a bit like having 10 pilots flying a plane. One pilot just looks after the left wing. Another pilot, he just does takeoff. Another pilot just does landing. Another pilot just does navigation. Another pilot just does autopilot. Another pilot just does the right wing. And of course, when something starts to go wrong with a plane and a poor flight attendant rushes in and says, what's going on? You know, pilot number one says, well, the left wing is good. Nothing to do with me. I don't know what's going on. And the next pilot says, well, look, the right engine is fine. That's my area of expertise. It's doing well. But because there's nobody on the plane anymore who knows the whole plane and could put it all together, because a plane in the end is not just a collection of pieces. It's it's a unit on its own. And we don't really have specialists anymore in medicine who understand how the whole plane works. If you had it on an airplane, the plane wouldn't fly because nobody knows how to put it all together. So you really have to find when you get these complicated chronic illnesses which affect multiple parts of the body, you really have to find, you know, an interested functional or what we call integrative physician who's got a kind of a specialist knowledge on how the whole body fits together. So you're not going to expect your family doctor or even, you know, a super specialist to understand all the integral parts of how the body works. You need to find a functional integrative doctor who's kind of trained to look at complex illnesses and the word holistic is overused, but you know what I'm trying to say, that they know how everything works together. Now, they know that a parasite might affect your mood, so a gut problem. They know that that low zinc levels in the body may produce low testosterone levels, so that sort of thing, which is in the textbooks but is now ignored by orthodox medicine.
Well, I actually really like your analogy with the pilot. I mean, it just made me think about what I went through. I went, when my testosterone was low, a specialist said, let's increase your testosterone. When I couldn't get an erection, another doctor said, you got to take Viagra. And I went, and then the other doctor, and then the same doctor said, oh, you're tired, here, take some Adderall. And I went, this is really strange. I actually literally felt like the airplane you're talking about. I felt like I was just parts that they were fixing. And I was like, I knew something bigger was wrong with me. Now, the question is now, if that's the case, is someone that's listening who has PFS, that's actually kind of scary news. It's like, now where do we begin? How do we holistically take a look at what's wrong with us when we don't even know what's happening in the first place for many of us? So where's the first place for us to look?
Okay, well, the first thing, and you'll know this, the first thing is you have to make sure there is no typical explanation. You have to make sure, obviously, you've checked your testosterone levels, they're low. You've checked the LH and FSH, and you can see that they're low. I mean, that's a clue that the problem is coming from the brain and not the testicles themselves. I mean, there's only two reasons why your testicles will not produce enough testosterone. One is the testicles are lazy, or two, the brain is not giving the testicles the right instruction. And so the brain uses these two hormones, luteinizing hormone and FSH, to tell the testicles how to work. So if your testosterone levels are low and the LH and FSH are low, The problem is because the brain is not giving your testicles adequate stimulation. So now you know the problem is central and it's not a testicular problem, which is usually the case. Of course, you want to make sure then that the MRI is normal. You don't want to be thinking you've got post-finasteride syndrome only to find out you've got a large pituitary tumor, which is causing your low testosterone. So we're going to have this discussion assuming that all that usual stuff has been excluded, the usual cause of low testosterone. A 20-year-old man should not have low testosterone, although we do know because of the world that we live in, which is filled up with estrogenic substances, the plastics and the pesticides and the soy, testosterone levels and sperm counts are the lowest they've ever been in recorded history. So it's low testosterone is a problem for all men nowadays, but certainly not to the degree that post-finasteride syndrome is. So if we've assumed that we have excluded other hormonal problems like a pituitary tumor, we know that LH and FSH are low, suggesting the problem is not with the testicles, it is with the brain, then we have to try and figure out what is it which is stopping our brain telling our testicles to work harder. And some of the factors that I've found that are involved, certainly parasites have a role, but also the big one is the zinc and copper balance. And I've found a lot of people have improved dramatically once we fix the zinc and copper problems, which I'm happy to go on and explain in more detail if you want me to talk about zinc and copper.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I've never heard of this. Very rare or unusual for me to even hear. First of all, I've never even considered taking an MRI. I've never even heard anyone say that here before, that should be something to rule out testosterone.
How old were you when you said you had that low testosterone? How old were you?
I crashed two and a half years ago?
And how old were you then?
So I'm 36 years old now, when I was 34 years old.
All right, so a 34-year-old should still have really good levels of testosterone. So there is something very, very wrong if a 34-year-old man has low testosterone levels. So the first thing you would have to do, it's a bit like, I mean, you have to remember that I'm trained as an emergency physician. So you come and see me with chest pain. I'm not going to ask you if you've been working out in the gym too much yesterday. I'm going to assume that you are having a heart attack until I can work out that you're not. So I'm trained to think of not the most common problem. I am trained to think of the most life-threatening problem. So that's the way my kind of brain works. But nonetheless, a young man, you know, a man under the age of 40 with very low testosterone levels would certainly need some sort of test to ensure they didn't have a pituitary tumor causing their low testosterone levels. I mean, post-finasteride syndrome is a diagnosis of exclusion. That's the important thing. It's a diagnosis of exclusion that you would consider once you have excluded other more common causes of low testosterone. Irritable bowel syndrome is not a diagnosis. Irritable bowel syndrome means there's something wrong with your gut, and I have done every test I can think of, and I can't find an explanation. So again, post-finasteride syndrome is a diagnosis of exclusion once you've excluded all other problems. And part of that workup would be a test to make sure your pituitary gland did not have a tumor in it.
And people that are listening to this is really important because, ever since I've been on this podcast, I've had people call me and say, hey, I haven't been feeling like I've been able to work out in the gym. I think I have PFS, or I've been really tired in the morning lately, and I think I have PFS. And I think it's very, very, you have to be a lot more cautious. I mean, he's telling you, Dr. Emerson's saying, look, check your levels, check your, do an MRI. A lot of people I've spoken to haven't even seen what their DHT levels are, what their testosterone levels are, their FSH levels are, and they're symptomatic. I have anxiety. And then you go, what you been doing? Oh, I just broke up with my girlfriend last week as well, and I think it's PFS related. And I really like that you're saying it's a symptom or a syndrome of deduction, first of all. It's not you have something and so therefore you have PFS. It's like, look, you have to have six or eight things probably or whatever the number is, and then we're deducing, okay, that looks like it looks like PFS. It may not even be PFS, but it looks like that's what it is. Is that what you're pointing to?
I couldn't have said it better myself. Well done.
Okay, great. Great. Okay, so for those listening, then you know, get checked out, do your MRIs, get all the things that you need to get done, and you know, maybe throughout the conversation, I want to hear about the zinc. Is what tests should people get in order to kind of go in the right direction as to whether they're, you know, got affected by PFS or not?
Well, I think the next thing to look at are the zinc and copper levels. There's a condition called pyrrole disorder. Have you heard of pyrrole disorder, Amir?
No. Is it pyrone? Is it
No. Pyrone is a bent penis.
Okay.
We're not
so that's
talking
about
bent penises today at all.
Okay. I have not heard of that.
Okay, pyrrole disorder is fascinating. You'll really enjoy this, looking into this. Pyrrole disorder is a condition first kind of brought to light by Dr. Bill Walsh and Dr. Carl Pfeiffer. Dr. Carl Pfeiffer was a famous U.S. psychiatrist, and Dr. Bill Walsh, who's a friend of mine, is he's a PhD in engineering. But they got together and they started looking at the biochemistry in terms of the workup of psychiatric or mental illness. Was there a biochemical explanation? And it's good basic biochemistry. And pyrrole disorder is one of the things. The most famous person with pyrrole disorder was Charles Manson. And I'm not saying people with pyrrole disorder are like Charles Manson, though, but it's just a good example of what can happen. So pyrrole disorder is genetic. Probably the main manifestation of pyrrole disorder is anxiety. And, of course, the problem with young men is that we are taught to not show anxiety. So men may be anxious. In fact, a lot of young men will disguise anxiety with aggression. So some, because it's not something that you and I are very good at putting our hand up and saying, look, we're anxious, we're not coping with life. As men, we're not very good at that sort of thing. So we'll often be disguised in men or covered up by aggression. But pyrrole disorder is genetic, and it means that when you make heme for your hemoglobin, you also make pyrroles. Now, everybody does that, but some people make far too many pyrroles. And if you make too many pyrroles, you pee them out. The trouble is, when you pee out pyrroles, you're also peeing out zinc and vitamin B6. So you become profoundly deficient in zinc and vitamin B6. And you need zinc and vitamin B6 to make the calming, feel-good neurotransmitters in the brain. So you tend to become anxious, don't handle stress very well, worry too much. Now, those three symptoms are a clue that there might be a zinc and copper imbalance, because here's the next thing to understand. Both zinc and copper are essential for production of neurotransmitters and hormones in the brain. So, and as your zinc goes down, your copper goes up. So if you're profoundly zinc deficient from your pyrrole disorder, you'll have low zinc and you'll have high copper. Now, low zinc on its own is required for the production of testosterone. So if you've got chronically low zinc, you're going to be at risk of something like post-finasteride syndrome. And if you've got high copper, you're also going to cause a lot of neurotransmitter imbalance. Now, the interesting thing is sometimes people have also got low copper. So you might have low zinc and high copper, or sometimes you'll have low zinc and low copper, but all of those, both zinc and copper, are essential for production of neurotransmitters and therefore hormones in the brain, and I've found a massive correlation in imbalance of the zinc and copper ratio and the post-finasteride syndrome. Am I still with you?
Yeah, no, I'm listening to this. I'm actually jotting this down. No, and so let me ask you, so how do you spell pyrroles, first of all?
P-Y-R-R-O-L-E, pyrrole disorder. Dr. Walsh has done some good YouTube videos. You go on YouTube and search Dr. Walsh, W-A-L-S-H, and pyrrole disorder. Or actually, it's on YouTube, it's pyrroluria, P-Y-R-O-L-U-R-I-A, pyrroluria.
Pyrroluria, okay.
And you can search Dr. Walsh and zinc and Dr. Walsh and copper.
And so, what does this mean for people with PFS? Is this is there any correlation or a link for us as far as
That's what I'm saying. Once you've had your MRI, once you've made sure that there's nothing else is going on, that's the next thing I would be checking. If somebody comes to me and says, I got post-finasteride syndrome, nobody knows why, first thing I'm thinking about, okay, I want to check your zinc and copper levels.
Okay,
and
got
I'll say, do you have a history of anxiety? Oh, no, but my father doesn't handle stress really well. I'm going, okay, look, I think we might be onto something here. No, I don't, but I have a history of mental illness in my family. I think we're on something here. And I say, look, do you ever get anxious? They say, no, but, you know, I get angry a lot. And I say, oh, well, that's interesting, because in men sometimes anxiety presents as anger. So now I'm going, look, I really think that this might be the path we need to go on, and I want to check your zinc and copper levels. That's the first thing.
Okay.
Now, I'd check them anyway. I mean, I just like to get some feedback that I'm Sherlock Holmes and I'm going in the right direction. But certainly zinc and copper is the first thing I'd be checking. And the important thing to remember with zinc and copper is you also want to get the red cell levels done as well, not just the plasma. So you can get, when you're doing a blood test of minerals, you can get the minerals in the blood, but it's sometimes the minerals inside the cells which are most important. So I would always suggest getting both a plasma level of zinc and copper and also red cell levels of zinc and copper done.
Okay. And let me ask you, with some of your PFS patients that you've had, have you seen anything that was unique with their zinc and copper?
Well, what do you mean by unique?
In other words, someone who doesn't have PFS would have different looking zinc and copper levels versus six people that have PFS. Would their zinc and copper levels look similar? If they had PFS?
Again, here's another problem with medicine. The whole basis of medicine is based on blood tests. But when you think about it, blood tests are a very strange concept. It's a bit like you taking a car to a mechanic, and mechanic says, okay, give me a number for how your car is running. And you say, well, that's a bit hard. What do you mean? Do you mean the brakes or the gearbox? Because the brakes are stuffed, but the gearbox is pretty good. And he'll say, no, just give me one number. We don't do that with cars, but we do it with medicine. We say, okay, let's go get blood for testosterone levels. And let that one level at one nanosecond in time tell me what's going on with my testosterone in my body. Now, testosterone has receptors all over the body. What does the blood level of testosterone mean about how testosterone is operating inside my cells, inside my brain, where it's telling me how much libido to have? What is the level of my blood level of copper mean about how much copper I've got inside my brain cells where it's making neurotransmitters, or how much copper have I got in the brush border of my intestinal cells where it helps me fight parasites? There's this massive extrapolation that we have in medicine, and a blood test is representative of intracellular levels in every organ in the body, whereas it might not be. So blood tests, all I'm really saying is that understand what a rudimentary science blood tests really are, and we're just trying to get some sort of indication that is the area we should be spending more time in, looking at zinc and copper levels. So I don't think blood tests are good enough to give us a unique picture, because everybody is unique, and the blood tests are not good enough to tell us what's going on inside a brain cell. Does that make sense?
It makes 100% sense. And again, my head is spinning because I'm going, that's the only thing that people use to see what's going on with me. So what's another option from your understanding? Then if blood test is not good enough, what is something that you may do different, or what's another option?
There isn't. A brain biopsy would be a really good test, but it's generally a fatal procedure, so not one we generally do in medicine.
I just
think you have to be a little bit of a Sherlock Holmes. I've been watching that. What's that US TV show called? Elementary, I think, with Lucy Liu. Good show, kind of watch. About you're not gonna solve the crime. The crime's never the bad guy doesn't jump out and hold up a sign saying he's guilty. I mean, you've got to use a lot of deduction and putting the jigsaw together. So good medicine is about look, we're not going to get all the jigsaw pieces, but we're going to get most, and by getting most, we're then going to have a pretty reasonable chance of interpreting the picture in the jigsaw puzzle. So you just have to you have to get the best you've got, which is the blood test. Then you've got to use some Sherlock Holmes deduction skills after that, and some experience, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, with that being said, you're working with some patients that have PFS, is that correct?
Yes, yes.
So, I don't know if it's different in the United States. For the most part, from what I've understood, in my experience, my doctor gave me Clomid to see, to raise my testosterone and my DHT. That's kind of the popular thing to do here is clomiphene sulfate and then anastrozole to lower down the estrogens.
Yep.
I don't know if that's something similar you guys do over there. With some of your patients, what kind of success rate are you getting? Here's what I'm trying to say. I guess it seems here in the U.S., we get something and it's like, we have to figure it out immediately. That's kind of the thing for me. I see it's like we need to get this turned around. From the way that you're talking about it, it's look, we have blood tests as the best that we can. But when you're Sherlock Holmes, that means that you got to be patient and you got to see what works and then you got to wait to see how your body reacts. That seems like it takes a long time to figure out. Is that true? And if that's true, what kind of results have you had with your patients who have PFS?
I think that's very true. I mean, we all have a kind of an instant gratification, and people tend to move around doctors very quickly now if they're not getting the right results. So there's this temptation in medicine now to you'll try and grab, if you're going to go the slow deduction route and solve the mystery, even Sherlock Holmes never solved the mystery in one consultation. But now in medicine, you tend to find that if people aren't getting an immediate result, they'll go to somebody else. So there's a temptation in medicine now I have to do something now to get this person working better. Otherwise, they're going to think I'm hopeless. And so there's a tendency to grab for something to try and get a result before perhaps working it out. So that is a problem, because people don't have to have the patience or the confidence in the doctors stick with them while they work stuff out. That being said, I mean, I've had some good results with clomiphene in people with just low testosterone, living in the estrogenic world that we now live in. I have not, in general, had great results with clomiphene in people with post-finasteride syndrome. I've had much better results with looking at the zinc and copper, the pyrrole disorder. Concept.
Really? You, with PFS people who have PFS,
yeah.
Including me, you've had better results looking at zinc and copper. That's really interesting. And how did you, when you say you've had better results, you mean what's happening to your patients? What are some differences that they're seeing?
Well, they're back in business,
mean. Okay, really? Oh, you mean sexually?
Yes.
Oh man, that is. I mean, because that's a huge one for us right now. I'm 30. I'll tell you from me. I feel wonderful again. I'm at 90% with how I feel physically. I still can't maintain an erection for the life of me, and I have a beautiful wife, and I don't even have sexual thoughts to maintain an erection. And so you would recommend looking at zinc and copper like that? That is something. If you were looking at me. Something to look at.
After I'd excluded a pituitary tumor, it's the first thing I would go and look at. If I asked you that question, if I asked you about anxiety or excessive worry or poor handled stress or family history of the same, would you have said yes, there's an element of that in your family or your history?
So my history, absolutely not. I anxiety and all that, I've never really had it much. My father, on the other hand, is extremely... they say he has Turkish blood because he gets angry immediately. His whole family is like that on his end. So are you telling me that it could be hereditary as well?
Well, pyrrole disorder is genetic.
Genetic.
So yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't.
Pyrrole disorder is genetic.
Not, So even if I'm not anxious ridden, or if I don't, you know, show my anger, it can still come from my father.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And what you're telling me is that there's ways to confirm that, that it could be something that I have?
Yes, you get your red cell zinc. Well, you can test your urine pyrroles. So that's an easy test to do. They just check the urine pyrroles and levels. And if they're elevated, you've confirmed you've got pyrrole disorder. And then you can go on and check your levels of zinc and B6 to see how deficient and the copper levels. But most women with postnatal depression have high copper levels. They don't have postnatal depression, they have high copper. And you can fix them very quickly by correcting their copper levels. So the zinc and copper have a profound effect on the biochemistry of the brain. In the end, this is a biochemistry class. That's why it's funny it's not done better in medicine, because it's in all the biochemistry textbooks.
Wow, this
is... So we have
this
sitting on our shelf.
I'm telling you, Dr. Emerson, this is really a first of hearing about this. And again, I don't go on too many of the post-finasteride blogs and all that myself. But from the things that I've heard, a lot of people are going towards trying to fix their adrenals or you know, fixing their testosterone. But this is really a first for me to check my zinc and copper levels. So this is actually really good news. This is actually it's frustrating that I never actually heard about this. In another way, this is, I mean, for people that are listening, this is probably going to be really good news. Is there, now you're in Brisbane. Is there anyone that you know for people that are in the United States that can, follow along your line? Or should they call you?
Don't call me. I'll be on my farm planting some sweet potatoes. Walshinstitute.org is Bill Walsh's website. I imagine somewhere that he has find a practitioner. Find a practitioner for a listing of doctors and clinics that provide biochemical / nutrient therapy in or near your state or country. Please read Dr. Walsh's book, Nutrient Power, or visit our clinical references pages. Clinical resources: doctors in Alaska, Arizona, California, Florida, Georgia, Illinois.
Okay, that's great. So go to Dr. Do you have that website out of curiosity?
Yeah, walshinstitute.org.
Walshinstitute.org. This is actually one of the few podcasts that I'm sitting here jotting notes for myself as well. So,
this is not the answer for everybody, but it's a good direction to start heading, because ultimately we've established by the low FSH and LH that the problem is central. It's a brain problem. We've also established by a normal MRI that it's not a structural problem. So therefore, it must be a biochemical problem, which is manifesting subsequently down the track as a hormonal problem. So it fits in very well with our deductive reasoning.
Now let me ask you, what does finasteride itself have to do with this? In other words, what's finasteride doing to the body in order for it to mess up the copper and zinc? Is there a correlation to that, do you believe?
I don't have the answer to that.
You don't have the answer to that? Okay.
No, I do not have the answer to that. I don't know that. I don't know that, but it's the same thing. You know, if you look at vaccinations, same discussion with vaccinations. Why do some people get vaccinations and have no problems, and other people get vaccinations and they get terrible adverse reactions? And it's almost certainly because of the fact that they have genetic or biochemical predispositions to the vaccine. And we don't look at that when we vaccinate people. Everyone just rolls up their sleeves, gets the same vaccine, the same schedule. But we're not looking, one, we're not reading the safety data insert on the vaccine, and two, we're also not checking their genetics or their biochemistry, which might predispose them to a reaction to the vaccine. So same thing. So you're looking at very, you know, this is not stuff that's been well looked into or described. I'm just one guy sitting in an office, you know, hiding from the world, running off to a farm, trying to work a few mysteries out. Not a lot of research going on in this area.
Yeah, it seems like it's very, very new, and it's very, it's rare indeed, especially in the United States. I don't know if it's just a lot of politics involved in medicine. Like you said, you know, you have 7 minutes with a patient, and you're on to the next. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that it's like that. So, I mean, even just with what you've said, this has really been mind blowing for me. Can I ask you now? You said that you guys, you've done Clomid. I don't know if you know anything about Proviron or Proviron? Is that how you say it?
Hang on, I'll have a look, see what it is. No, not that name, but it might be a brand name of something I'm familiar with.
Yeah, let me see. Proviron. If I can. Proviron.
Methendrostenol.
It's essentially, yeah, Mesterolone. It's basically DHT.
Anabolic steroid.
Is that, yes.
Interesting anabolic steroid, though it's not much value to bodybuilding. It seems the most common reason for many to consider including steroid stackers for anti-estrogenic activity. There was some merit in this. So, no, I have no experience with it at all.
No idea. Because from my understanding, at least from what I know, when people have PFS, the DHT plummets, and that's the biggest problem, because what the idea from finasteride is that, you know, for you to prevent your hair loss, it's to completely remove your DHT or stop your DHT.
Yes.
So
yeah,
then would it not make sense to try to increase your DHT? That's where the big problem is. Like it seems like that's where people should be looking. Am I correct or no?
Yeah, that's true. But the question is, why has it dropped that person's DHT so dramatically that they have had these problems? Why is that 1 in 1,000 had this problem when the other 999 have not? And that's where you take the next step back. You say, okay, sure, this has probably happened because of this, but then why did that happen? Sure, same thing when you've got, you know, you've been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and somebody does an MRI and you find that there's demyelinating lesions. Well, you shouldn't stop there. You should go, okay, well, what's causing the myelin sheath around my nerves to be eroded away? Same thing with this. Sure, this has happened to me. Why is it? Well, you may find that it's a zinc-copper imbalance, which has differentiated you from the other 1,000 people, which has meant you've had this profound effect on the dihydrotestosterone. And once you correct the zinc-copper, then the dihydrotestosterone levels correct themselves. Now, again, it's not the answer of everybody, but it's certainly for, you know, you just got to try a few things, and that's certainly one avenue of going down, which has a good biochemical explanation of why it might have happened.
I'm just wanting to ask, and I wish I could spend 3 hours on this phone call. Unfortunately, we're coming on the tail end of it. But, you know, let me ask you then, because along with what you're saying, there's people that I know that have been on finasteride for many years, stopped it, and nothing ever happened to them. And then there's someone like me who was on it for many years, stopped it, and I crashed. It makes sense that there has to be a genetic disposition, or else everyone would be doing the same thing as I am. Now, why is it then, after that I get off of it, I my levels don't seem to want to go back to homeostasis, as they say, go back to normal levels? What is it with finasteride that stops me? Is it my genetic disposition? Is it what finasteride does?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And,
yeah, that is the million-dollar question.
We're trying to work that out. And the closest I have come is thinking it's something to do with this zinc copper and the pyrrole disorder, which might give a reasonable explanation of why it happens in you and nobody else. That's what we're trying to work out, what's going on with your individual genetic and biochemical makeup, which has caused this problem in you when it doesn't cause it in other people. That's the Sherlock Holmes question. And that's
that
the better thing, you think, okay, what can I take to try and What testosterone should I take? Should I take clomiphene? Okay, let's take a step back, try and work this out, because you might not have to take it, because you correct the stuff, you'll be fine afterwards. That's
right.
The ultimate goal.
Absolutely. And so let me. This is off topic, and I wanted to ask you this in the beginning. How the heck did you get PFS patients to begin with? I mean, it sounds like you. Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense with what you're doing. But how did you even come to light? Like when I got an email that said, "Hey, you should talk to Dr. Emerson about this." How did you even get involved with that?
Well, I suppose the we live in the information age. I mean, as soon as you do something these days, there's a lot of people who know about it. One thing our new age has given us is we don't have to rely on smoke signals anymore. We get instantaneous communication around the world. So, and once you've fixed one person and he goes and writes about it, the word gets out pretty quickly and then more people come and see you, which is good because it allows you to pick up more and more experience. One of the key things in being a good medical detective is having some experience. Because you can see what works and what doesn't work. And one of the problems that you find now with the internet is a lot of people writing articles, writing blog sites aren't actually on the coalface anymore to see if what they're writing about actually works. There's a lot of rehashing of old stuff. And there's a lot of, you know, I remember once I was writing a book on, I mean, same thing happened with, you know, it was interesting. One interesting story was with when I can't remember the name of the U.S. Urologist who went in and looked at all the data on testosterone causing prostate cancer, which is what we told everybody for, you know, 20, 30 years in medicine. And it was in every book and stuff. But when he went back to explore it, he checked the reference for somebody who wrote it, and he went back and checked the original article, and the original article wasn't actually research, it was just something that somebody had written in a previous article. So he checked that reference, went back, wasn't research, it was just something somebody had written. And it took him ages to get back to the original data, which people had been quoting, saying that testosterone causes prostate cancer, and they found that it was on two patients, a case report on two patients from 30 years ago, one case report was wrong, and the other case was misinterpreted. So basically, the whole mantra that testosterone replacement in men causes prostate cancer was coming from one study 30 years ago of two people, and it was incorrect conclusions, yet that becomes the mantra. So one of the good things about still being in clinical practice is that you get to test a lot of these things. What's going on? Does it work? If it doesn't work, let's try something else. And, of course, so people coming to see you with these problems allows you to build up that experience. They just have to have faith in you that you're kind of working with you to try and solve these problems. So the word gets out very quickly that you're passionate and you want to try and help these people.
So, well, now my next question, because we are almost out of time. I want to thank you again. This is Dr. Greg Emerson from where do you live exactly?
I live in the Tambourine Mountain, which is part of the Gold Coast hinterland in Australia, but I'm from New Zealand originally, the South Island of New Zealand.
So let me ask you, with that being said, are you not taking any new clients? I'm guessing people that have PFS are going to try to contact you. Where are you at right now as far as taking clients and consulting?
Well, the problem is I can't medico legally, and I go to Texas quite a bit. I'll be in the U.S. again in February doing some work with ozone, and I go to Texas quite a bit, one of my favorite states, and I've got good friends in Texas, lovely people in Texas, and but the problem is then I get a lot of emails from people in Texas, but medico-legally I'm not able to offer any treatment or stuff for U.S. You have to be an Australian citizen, medico-legal. But I do have my Facebook page, Dr. Greg Emerson's Cedar Springs Farm. I have a lot of information about health, and there's my website. But I tend to write on my Facebook page. It's just a closed group, so I can, you know, keep the haters out. You apply to join, and I write a lot of information there about what I'm doing with health. And otherwise, I'm on TV frequently from based in Texas on the Nova Cause show in Texas, which I enjoy coming over every year and doing.
Well, Dr. Emerson, I just wanted to thank you. This has seriously been, I keep saying that with every single guest, that this has been one of my favorites, but this genuinely has been not only an eye-opener. I had no idea about who you are besides looking on your website for a moment. I hadn't seen anything else, and I'm actually just pleasantly surprised to have you on the show and to hear your perspective. So, again, is there, you know, if you want to see more about Dr. Emerson, you can go to www.drforgregemerson.com. And then is there anywhere else that they can find you outside of that? You said
Dr. Greg Emerson, Cedar, C-E-D-A-R, Cedar Springs Farm, Facebook page.
Perfect.
Just apply to Joy. Lots of fantastic information on there about what I'm doing to try and stay healthy myself and maintain good, healthy hormonal levels, which is important for all of us in a world which is desperately trying to have our levels lowered by all the chemicals in our environment.
That's exactly it. And I will put that in the show notes for people if they didn't write that down fast enough. I'll put that in the show notes. Will you do me a favor when we hang up? Will you email me that again, just the what you just said for your Facebook group? And then I will go ahead and put that in the show notes. And again, thank you so much. Our time is out. It'll actually cut us off in about 3 minutes. So I just wanted to say goodbye and say thank you so much. Would you be willing to get on the show again if there's anything new and up and coming?
Loved it. Loved
awesome.
It. Thanks very much for inviting me. And keep up the good work. You're obviously doing some good stuff over there.
Thank you so much.
Young men like you trying to help other people.
That's what the show is all about. Is someone that I'm going through it myself, and I'm trying to do Sherlock Holmes, and I'm kind of in a lucky position. I get doctors like you on the show to be able to discuss this. So this is a blessing for me as well.
As I said at the start, you know, had I not got sick from mold and parasites, you know, I'd still probably be working in the emergency department now, and you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. So, you know, I always say if I hadn't been through some of the marriage problems I had. I started giving relationship guidance when I was 24. I had no idea about relationships. Now, you know, 51, I've been through some stuff. I'm much better able to give advice. And so going through stuff like this for you and I enables us to be a much better resource for other people who go through it after us.
I love it. And that's just it, man. For people that are listening, there is, you know, instead of making this a problem, make it a project. And, you know, in a strange way, I do feel I know this is really weird to say, but lucky to be able to go through this and to be able to explain this to others and have them get better along the way. So, yeah, I 100% agree with you. And, again, this just show's about to end. So thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Emerson. And hopefully we'll be talking soon. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Thanks for the invite. See ya.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to PFS Global Support, where we offer coping strategies to thousands upon thousands of men afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. We're here to share your experiences across borders and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle PFS and put an end to this growing epidemic for future generations.
Man, he was...